Hi, this is Jim from Safety Wars. Before we start the program, I want to make sure everyone understands that we often talk about OSHA and EPA citations, along with some other regulatory actions from other agencies, legal cases, and criminal activity. Everyone is innocent until proven guilty in a court of law. Proposed fines are exactly that, and they are often litigated, reduced, or vacated. We use available public records, news accounts, and press releases. We cannot warranty or guarantee the details of any of the stories we share, since we are not directly involved with these stories, at least not most of the time. Enjoy the show.
This show is brought to you by Safety FM.
And from the border of liberty and prosperity in the highway to the north, this is Safety Wars for Thursday, September 13th. September 17th. The calendar says 2024. How's everybody doing? Wow, it's been a couple of days since we've been here. We've had a lot of stuff going on. So I am involved in a voter education that is once a month in Fairlawn, New Jersey. So we meet there. We meet some other places. So that's what I do. That's the only politics I'm really involved in. That's not really politics. That's voter education. How's everybody doing out there? We've had a lot going on. I hope your life has not been so exciting. We've had another attempted assassination and a scathing, I'm not going to go over it, scathing accusations made by Secret Service whistleblowers. More to follow, I guess. Jim, why aren't you shaved? We had to do a demonstration with a fit desk. Doing a 10-hour construction outreach class. What's strange is this is the first time I am doing one in my home, in my town, my adopted hometown, in county, I should say, Rockland County, New York. So we do service Metro New York. Most of our work is in New Jersey, Central New Jersey, Northern New Jersey, but we do service people in New York City, New York State, just not right around here. So when the opportunity came up, I got a phone call. Hey, we heard your podcast. We saw your website. You're right here. I said, yes. Okay, let's go for it. What can we do? And I said, well, you know, let's do it. I want to make sure everybody understands that the OSHA outreach training classes are all awareness level classes. We're not actually certifying you in anything. It's just an overall awareness class put in place because companies often don't do the right things, and there's a lot of information out there. The company I had today, they're like, you know, we've been doing this for 40 years. Didn't know that this was all there. So guess what? We're going to go and we're going to comply with this. Pardon me. I was talking all day and I am completely dry here. So I am drinking a lot here. Okay. A lot going on. We're going to continue with our our Disaster Preparedness Month. We're giving a presentation at Atonement Lutheran Church in Stony Point this weekend. We're talking about disaster preparedness with a church. If you want me to talk to your church, and if you want any type of health and safety oversight, give us a call, 845-269-5772. Now, I'm just going to go right into it. I don't have a lot to say tonight other than everyone's got to learn to get along. I don't know what else to say. Everyone's got to learn to get along. We have, it's just sad that we have to go through all of this stuff. Your assassination attempts, antagonism, you name it, we got it. So this is for hurricanes. So we're on the ready.gov for you folks at home on the audio, on video, you know, you can see everything. Let me make sure we got everything. Prepare for hurricanes. This is from ready.gov. Would you like to take a brief survey? No. Hurricanes are dangerous and can cause major damage from storm surge, wind damage, rip currents, and flooding. They can happen along any U.S. coast or in any territory in the Atlantic or Pacific Oceans. Storm surge historically is the leading cause, meaning that you get a lot of water in a very short period of time. There are three distinct seasons here. We're talking Eastern Pacific Hurricane, Atlantic Hurricane, and Central Pacific Hurricane season. That's Hawaii. And all have different times of the year. But basically, in Atlantic and Central Pacific is June 1st through November 19th. The Eastern Pacific Hurricane is May 15th through November 30th. Like with everything, make a plan. Hurricanes are not just a coastal problem. We found that out in 2012 with Superstorm Sandy. Find out how rain, wind, water, and even tornadoes could happen far inland and from where a hurricane or a tropical storm makes landfall. Start preparing now. Like I said, a basic emergency preparedness takes about 2 weeks. So it's not something you're going to do at the last moment here. And remember, creature comforts, food, water, creature comforts. What are you going to do? Basically, what are you going to do when you have nothing to do? No power or anything else? I was listening to another broadcaster talk about this this week, and he had brought out threats to the power grid. Big issue here with that. So make sure everyone in your household knows and understands your hurricane plans include the office, kids, daycare, or anywhere else you frequent in your hurricane plans. Where are you going to go? Make sure your business has some type of continuity plan. Plan for your business, not only for you. Know your evacuation zone and your evacuation route. If you're on the coast, I mean that you have coastal evacuation routes. Now, I'm most familiar with South Jersey, with hurricane evacuation routes. And, you know, there are apps to keep things going. Now, those with disabilities. So if you have an individual with a disability, you have to plan for that person. And if you plan for that person, you're probably going to end up planning for everyone else anyway, is what the idea is. So you plan for the person with the disability, with the mobility issues and everything else. Make sure you have your insurance policies and personal documents such as ID are up to date. Make sure you have copies of them. As far as your home is concerned, declutter the drains and gutters and bring in any outside furniture that may become airborne. Keep your cell phone charged and help your neighborhood. I've spoken to a lot of people who have gone through hurricanes in suburban areas, condominiums also, townhouses, but and apartment houses. But one of the handiest things, not only your standard supplies that we talk about, but chainsaws. Know how to use your chainsaw with that to clear trees and everything else. If someone has a pickup truck, you have a pickup truck, you're going to want to have chains and rope for clearing debris if necessary with that. All right, so dealing with the weather, determine how to best protect yourself from high winds and flooding. Take refuge in a designated storm shelter or an interior room for high winds. Go to the highest level of the building if you are trapped by flooding. Do not climb into a closed attic. I remember with Hurricane Katrina, a lot of people got trapped inside, in the ninth ward, inside the roofs, inside the attics, right? No way out. Do not walk, swim, or drive through floodwaters. I've known numerous people who have driven through floodwaters and have ruined their cars. Some in my family, some out. And photographs, big thing. Make sure you have photographs. You have the ability to take photos. Save phone calls for emergencies. Right? I know after 9/11, you couldn't make a phone call for hours here. And during Superstorm Sandy, no, there was no cell service. That way that we got... were able to make phone calls. If you remember this, I had a Subaru and I had 3G service in there. I was able to make internet calls, Skype calls. I was not able to make cellular calls, but the Skype worked over the Wi-Fi network. And, you know, we're talking about mold hazards and everything else. That's a story for another day with that, and stop the share on that. And that's basically what we're looking at there. We're going to go to our first commercial break. If I look a little bit tired, yes, I've been doing 7.5 hours of training today. And tomorrow, just to let you know, I'm going to attempt to pre-record all the programs to for the rest of the week because I am taking a night class for recertification of general industry outreach with Texas A&M being done remotely starting tomorrow afternoon. So I'm not going to be able to be here with that. But again, that's to make sure I'm able to serve you and my regular customers more effectively.
In the professional safety community, communication and planning are just a few keys to your program's success. The question many practitioners have is, where do I start? Dr. Jay Allen, the creator of the Safety FM platform and host of the Rated R Safety Show, has built a global foundation to help you along the way. Go to safetyfm.com and listen to some of the industry's best and most involved professionals, including Blaine Hoffman with the Safety Pro, Sam Goodman with the Hop Nerd, Sheldon Primus with the Safety Consultant, Jim Pozell with Safety Wars, Emily Elrod with Unapologetically Bold, and many others. As individuals, we can do great things, but as a team, we become amazing. Dial into safetyfm.com today and surround yourself with a powerful force of knowledge and support.
Hey there, safety professionals. Welcome to another episode of Safety Wars on Safety FM, hosted by Jim Posel, and today we're diving into what it really means to be on the front lines of the safety war. So, let's start with the basics. Safety is not just a set of rules or regulations. It's a culture, a mindset, a way of life. When we talk about safety, we're not just protecting workers from harm. We're building an environment where everyone can thrive. It's about going home safe and sound to our families every single day. Now, I know it sounds like a heavy responsibility, but that's why we're here. To make sure everyone understands the importance of safety and knows how to implement it effectively. Whether you're a seasoned safety professional or just starting out, there's always something new to learn. Let's talk about some key strategies. First up, communication. It's critical to ensure that everyone on the team is on the same page. Regular safety meetings, clear signage, and open dialogue can prevent a lot of accidents before they even happen. Next, let's focus on training. Proper training equips your team with the knowledge and skills they need to stay safe. Remember, it's not just about ticking a box. It's about making sure every worker understands the why behind each safety protocol. This understanding fosters a culture of safety where everyone looks out for one another. Of course, we can't forget about technology. From wearable safety devices to advanced monitoring systems, technology is revolutionizing how we approach safety. Embrace it. Use these tools to enhance your safety programs and keep your team protected. But let's not get too comfortable. Safety is an ongoing battle. New risks and challenges emerge all the time. Stay vigilant, stay informed, and never stop striving for a safer workplace. So, what's the takeaway? Safety is everyone's responsibility. It's about creating a culture where safety is ingrained in everything we do. As safety professionals, it's our job to lead by example and inspire our teams to commit to a safer future. Thanks for tuning into Safety Wars on Safety FM. Stay safe out there, and remember, every day is a new opportunity to make a difference. Catch you on the next episode.
OSHA recordables, catastrophic losses, environmental disasters. You want answers? So do I. This is Jim Posel with Safety Wars.
That's my daddy!
The music you're hearing is... We're gonna mosey on in. to our regular news. I don't know. You can give some comments back, I guess. Is it useful, the disaster preparedness? I always, you know, like I said, it's always a passion. And, this is a good start. Like I said, later on, there are certain things that you're hearing a lot about. Possibility of World War III with nuclear weapons. Some arguably say that we are already in World War III here. That's a scary thought. That's something I thought my children would never have to deal with. But this is what we have elections for, I guess, with this. And we have competent people managing things. And that's, in my opinion, one of these focuses that we have to have here. Are our leaders doing the right thing? We had a very passionate talk last week about 9/11 last Thursday, and a lot of times, what happens when you don't hold your leaders accountable with stuff? My opinion, if we held people accountable on 9/11 for making the decisions, and it wasn't so much the response, it was the ongoing recovery starting about a week afterwards, and if we had hold people a little bit more accountable with that, then we might not have had some of the other stuff leading up to COVID with things and how things were managed. That was a talk today during the class. We were talking about PPE and everything, the whole mask mandates that were out there. And are they effective or not? The answer is, one, you need to talk to your own medical professional. You know what your situation is. To make a decision on whether or not to wear a mask. In the laboratory, the masks are great, meaning the filtering face feast NIOSH-rated respirators, which is the only ones I'll ever recommend, are phenomenal, but it's in the use and the execution that there's an issue. And that's still an ongoing thing. There are ongoing lawsuits with that and everything else going on with that. So let's go right to the OSHA news and views. Here we go into the everything's right off of the OSHA website here with this, and we're looking at some other government websites again to get free. No, free stuff is great. It's a wonderful thing to have free stuff. Here we have U.S. Department of Labor recovers $77,000. Right, $77,000. I lost the story here. Okay. For five employees denied prevailing wages at federally funded construction project in Massachusetts. And basically, there was $77,206 in back wages for five workers. Now, if you're not familiar with this, if you're not working federal contracts, do you have what's called a Davis-Bacon Act and some other acts that are about prevailing wages? This way, you don't get only non-union people, unskilled people in a lot of cases, doing work. So this like levels the playing field between union, non-union, and it also guarantees that if you're on a federal contract, you're actually getting paid what you're supposed to, though your benefits are being paid and everything else with that. Because oftentimes what happens is contractors will go out there and they'll say, yeah, we're paying for prevailing wages. Pardon me, I got to scratch my head here. We're doing prevailing wages. I've been aware of a couple of cases like this. And then what happens when they do the prevailing wages? They're charging, let's say, $100 an hour for labor, but they're paying their people minimum wage $15 an hour, keeping the $85 an hour. That's not really legal. So what they require is that you're paying certain tradesmen and skilled labor, and they have a wage rate and table rate and everything else for what you're doing, and you get what you're supposed to be getting, and level the playing field here. Now, apparently this company failed to maintain accurate payroll records. And this is the other thing. If you're going to be dealing with folks that are savvy, which I hope our listeners are savvy, they're going to be keeping very detailed records for hours worked here. And that's what goes on. I'm working on a project now that is a Davis-Bacon, similar to a Davis-Bacon Act thing. And that everything has to be a certified payroll. And God forbid you don't do that right. It's got to be very detailed. The other thing that the Lower Hudson Valley has are tax credits for major construction jobs that have to utilize local work. So they want local labor to be building these things. I don't know. It's a good thing, bad thing. This is no. I don't know if it's good or bad or what. It is what it is there. And, you know, we have to go and do the right thing. Here. No, obey the law, as I always say. Always obey the law with that. Okay. I won't share this, but the Department of Labor orders subsidiary of a building materials supplier to reinstate and compensate driver who raised safety concerns. So this is the whole thing here, where if you have whistleblower protection, if you're going to have... if you complain, if you give pushback, and the company goes and they fire you, they discipline you, they do some kind of thing against you, you have whistleblower complaints. Even if you don't have to, it doesn't have to be a call to OSHA necessarily, and it has to be a call to just mentioning that something happened. All right. OSHA's whistleblower protection program enforces the whistleblower provisions of more than 20 whistleblower statutes, and they were able to recover back wages and interest for this gentleman, and a lot of money. They gave him a boatload of money here. OSHA had ordered the employer and its management group to reinstate the driver and pay them $58,000 in back wages and interest, $115,000 in compensatory damages, and $10,000 in punitive damages plus attorney fees. Again, a lot of bling there for doing this stuff. Department of Labor obtains a court order to forbid Maryland Home Care Agency, an owner, from retaliating against employees. Don't get. I mean, it's against the law already. Why do you have to issue an injunction and the reason is people obey the law. And this is making a point that this is what the law is and this is what you need to do. And there are other things that go in there for them to, with that. So it's ordering this employer, not to retaliate against employees for asserting federal rights, interrogating employees about communicating with department, meaning federal department or OSHA, Department of Labor officials, requiring employees to sign false and misleading time and pay records or provide false and misleading information, and communicating with employees about the department's investigation without disclosing that communications are not required and cannot be used as a basis of discrimination or retaliation. Now, I'm going to share this one here. This is, I am right now working with a shipyard on some issues here. I have a regular shipyard. We do maritime training here. So, hold on. So, right here, we have and you don't think about shipyards this far inland, but there are shipyards this far inland. This is from Ashtabula, Ohio. Federal workplace safety inspectors find shipyard workers exposed to fire and asphyxiation hazards while making repairs to cargo ship in Ashtabula. Federal safety investigators found, and this is a target in industry, shipyards, found a crew working aboard a commercial iron ore vessel moored at the port of Ashtabula. Narrowly avoided disaster after large fire erupted as they welded off paint in a cargo hold, an incident their employer could have avoided following U.S. Department of Labor safety regulations. That is 29 CFR 1915. Acting on a referral from the Coast Guard, inspectors from the department's OSHA determined the fire began while a worker used a welding equipment to remove paint the vessel's hold in March. Welding equipment removed paint. I guess they were burning it off and releasing whatever that is in the air and blah, blah, blah. On one and number two, it's probably in violation of marine chemists. Instructions. But anyway, many crew members who had working below the cargo hold were on lunch break at the time and avoided danger of the fire trapping them below decks. OSHA found the employer did not designate a competent person to identify hazards, nor had a marine chemist present to test for hazardous atmospheres before welding started. So, well, the idea is that you have to have a marine chemist, and what the regulation reads is, or a certified industrial hygienist, declare that gas-free, and then you have to, that person has to designate, the competent person has to designate that you're meeting those requirements, right? That's where they messed up on the USS Bonham Richard, the amphibious assault craft that they destroyed out in San Diego by fire. $2 billion ship, $2.8 billion in damage. Navy scrapped it, and the ship was pretty much brand new. They also determined that South Marine Systems did not stop work when small fires began to assess hazardous conditions and risks. Fate, not the company, helped the cargo vessel's crew avoid the disaster. The company's failure to comply with basic safety requirements for welding operations and working in confined spaces exposed workers to fires, asphyxiation, and everything else. So we're going to go through this. There were 15 serious violations here. And let's see, make sure this is coming across. I don't know why it's doing this. Okay. And close, you'll find this. And, you know, this is the standard thing that we always look at here. All right. Again, 15 days from receipt of this, you have to actually protest this. Don't miss that deadline. Citation 91-1915.7V1, the employer did not designate one or more shipyard competent persons, 11,300. Citation 1, item 2, the employer did not ensure the person performing tests and inspections recorded the time, date, and operations performed, as well as the test results and any instructions. When test inspections were performed by a competent person, marine chemist, or certified industrial hygienist, $11,300. Citation 1, item 3. The employer did not ensure that sealed and non-ventilated spaces were visually inspected and tested by a competent person to determine the atmosphere's content prior to initial entry into the space. $11,292. Citation 1, item 4, D1, 1915.12 D1. Did they have training? $11,300 almost. Citation 1, item 5. The employer neither established a shipyard rescue team nor arranged for an outside rescue team to respond promptly. $11,300. Citation 1, item 6A. Hot work was permitted before testing by a competent person, 10% LEL or lower. All right, this was also done at a oil terminal. So this is an added hazard, right? 11,292. Citation 1, item 6B, hot work was permitted in or on dry cargo holds, $0. Citation 1, item 7, 1915, work was not stopped with prohibited conditions, $11,300. I'm rounding it up slightly, but I'm rounding it up by $8. $29 CFR 1915-53. No test was made but a competent person determined the flammability of a surface covered by an unknown preservative. There, $11,300. Citation 1, item 9. A 1.5-inch or larger fire hose with fog nozzle uncoiled, placed under pressure, and protected from freezing conditions was not in the immediate vicinity here. And basically no firefighting, $11,300. Citation 1, item 10. There was not at least one portable or permanent ladder in the vicinity of each floating vessel. $4,800 on that and change. Citation 1, item 11A, a written fire safety plan was not developed and implemented by the employer. $11,300. Citation 1, item 11B, the employer did not describe the internal and external fire response organization. There was no dollars on that. Citation 1, item 12, no fire watch. $11,300. Citation 1, item 13, $11,300. Medical exams. Right, 1915-505, fire response, no medical exams. Citation 1, item 14, employer did not provide a self-contained breathing apparatus to all fire response employees, $11,300. Each fire watch employee was not trained in basic fire behavior, fire classes. Basically, they were interviewed, the employees, and they couldn't answer. $11,300. The employer did not provide an authorized government representative records within 4 business hours. That was OSHA 29 CFR 1904-40, $16,113 for a grand total. And these are proposed. Remember, they could be negotiated downward or everything else. $164,540 on that. So we are going to save this. How do I save this? I will go back. We'll go back after the show and save that. All right. U.S. Department of Labor obtains judgment to recover $540,000 in wages, damages for 604 shortchange Las Vegas construction workers. Again, they were willfully underpaying employees here. While workers often average 55 hours per week, investigators found the employer failed to pay workers for required overtime for all 40 hours in a 40-hour week, a violation of Fair Labor Standards Act. So they were recovered $275,000 in back wages, $275,000 in liquidated damages, and $10,000 in penalties for willful nature. And again, you got to keep track of those hours with this. U.S. Department of Labor Office and the Trade Representative announced resolution of alleged labor rights denials at San Luis Potosi parts maker. United States and Mexico have announced the successful resolution to a situation that alleged workers' rights were denied at a certain company in Mexico. Mexico government facilitated a resolution to remediate workers' claims by posting neutrality statements, creating company guidelines on freedom of association to collective bargaining, and collaborating with Mexico's Secretaría del Trabajo y Provisional Social to provide training with workers. How do you like that Spanish there? Not so good, I know. The agreement also included reinstatement of a fired union delegate with back pay to the date of dismissal. Filed under the U.S., Mexico, and Canada's Agreements Rapid Response Labor Mechanism, this is the 25th time the Department and U.S. Trade Representative have used the mechanism to benefit workers. Again, we're in here with other countries here. Okay, and anything else from the Department of Labor? Yeah, this is another one. A company, let's share this one. U.S. Department of Labor recovers $549,000 in back wages and damages from a saline employer that misclassified 63 employees as independent contractors. Why would a company do this? All right, what kind of work were they doing here? And this is the second time allegedly they've done this. It's a construction company that installs underground fiber optics here. But basically, You classify these folks as independent contractors, and you don't have to follow OSHA regulations is one of the things. And you don't have to pay unemployment. You don't have to pay FICA. You don't have to pay nothing. No taxes. They're taking care of everything. So this is what employers do. They though everyone wants to be the boss, but no one wants to be the employer. So the saying goes. And this is to get around a lot of different federal laws, including OSHA laws. So they, again, it's $297,137 in back wages for 63 employees and same amount of money in liquidated damages with this. Not a good thing with that. And the other thing is no workers' comp. All right. Now, OSHA has also issued a statement on the emergency responder rulemaking. Let's take a look at that. OSHA has issued the following statement regarding its emergency response rulemaking and volunteer emergency responders. OSHA's rulemaking of emergency response is focused on providing long overdue protections to emergency responders. I did speak to my congressman, Mike Lawler's office on this last week on this, and we had a very productive conversation here for the congressman. The agency has tremendous respect for both the work and that the emergency responders do, their unique role in providing essential public safety services to every community. On February 5th, OSHA published the notice of proposed rulemaking. While OSHA does not directly cover volunteer emergency responders, some OSHA safely on street volunteers as employees under state law, which is how a federal proposed standard could affect volunteer responders in those state plans. In the NPRM, OSHA preliminary determined, based on the limited evidence available to them at this time, the proposed rule would be economically feasible. That's one of the things is, now they asked, congressman's office, is this economically feasible? I said, well, my opinion, according to OSHA, it is. I don't know if it is or not. But according to OSHA, it is. According to the volunteer organizations, it is not. There's been a lot of pushback, especially here in New York, especially along the northern tier of what we call upstate New York, with this. Now, the other thing is this. We have had a true story, I Lied to You Not, where there's been documented cases in our local community there that there are volunteer firefighters going out there that are not affiliated with any volunteer fire department. It's just a bunch of guys driving around in an SUV or pickup truck with fire extinguishers putting out fires. And people are calling them rather than the fire department. If you're familiar with Rockland and Orange County politics, enough said on this. You know what the politics is here for that. So OSHA is saying that they've received comments in response to the NPRM for many stakeholders, including volunteer emergency responders, fire chiefs, etc., raised serious concerns about the economic feasibility of the proposed standard for volunteer fire departments. OSHA takes these concerns seriously. The comments submitted to the rulemaking docket provide crucial information that the agency did not have earlier in the rulemaking process. This new information will help the agency make necessary determinations. And this is why you have the public participating in all of this stuff. OSHA is committed to taking steps in any final standard. And remember, volunteer departments, I'm sorry, people treat them. No, I said this last week, and I know it's offensive, but I'm going to say it anyway. How much is your, then with political organizations, it also applies in these situations. How much is your opinion worth when you're not getting paid for it? The answer is woofno, is zero, nothing. With a lot of people. So, issuing opinions and everything else, you give people your opinions. And the thing is, with a volunteer, even if it's a fire department, they're a vital necessary service and communities that have them. Since they're not getting paid, I'm sorry, their input is not listened to by the decision makers allocating funds and managing them with that. That's my whole sense of that. They're like often the bastard child of everything. I'm the whole, well, you're a volunteer. Well, you're a volunteer. And I see that happen on my life where they look down on them when these people are not the people you should be looking down on at all. They're valued members in the community. They add safety to the community. They add capacity to the community. What the issue here is this, is that they're not always treated safely. They're not always treated with the best equipment. They're not always treated with respect. They're not always treated with enough training, and on and on and on and on. Do they need regulations? Probably. My experience, probably, from the firefighters I've spoken to. They need something. Now, some communities, and I do know as fire trainers in some communities, where they don't give them adequate training, and they know it's not adequate training. Case in point, I was in a jobs site in the Midwest many, many years ago, and they had told, it was an environmental cleanup, they had told the emergency responders what they were doing. Emergency responders said, we do not have the capability of dealing with the kind of fire at a hazardous waste site that you have right out that window there. So we can't have that, but you're going to have to pay for training, equipment, and everything else. The company, and they blew them off, and then there was a fire. And they called 911. I called 911 because there was a fire on site. I got yelled at, screamed at, cursed at, and everything else. They were violating the Federal Whistleblower Act, which I was unaware was there. This is why we have OSHA outreach training. I probably could have gotten a lot of money off on them off of this. And they said, you're not allowed to call 911. My boss, Jeffrey Olcott, who we spoke about last program, he told them, saying not so many nice words. He told them where to stick it. And he said, Jimmy, pack up your guvno and come back to New Jersey because these people are dangerous. So I called up the fire department 911. You know what they said to me? Jimmy, right? They said, Jimmy, yeah, Jimmy, yeah, you're working out here, yeah, you're the safety guy out there, yeah, small town. They knew me, they liked me out there, right? They said, okay, we told your boss that we are not equipped to do this kind of fire. So when the fire starts approaching your trailer or vehicles and everything, give us a call back and we'll come out. Click. You know, again, then we're not prepared for that. They weren't asked for equipment. They were not given that. Now you're expecting them to risk life and limb for this stuff, right? With that, and we know what happens when you don't give firefighters, emergency responders, the right equipment, the right training, the right information, and everything else. We have a situation like we had on September 11th to September 18th, 2001. Right, and with that, with emergency responders, and then after that, with the ongoing cleanup down at Ground Zero, where they didn't have the right equipment, they didn't enforce rules, they suspended OSHA rules, and the OSHA became a consulting thing, and you had a lot of people dead here. So with that, right, ongoing illnesses related to 9/11. So, can you give additional input here? Yeah, you can give it. You could go, while initial comment period has closed, OSHA strongly encourages stakeholders to provide information and data relevant to this question at the public rulemaking hearing scheduled to begin on November 12th, 2024, and during post-hearing comment period. And they give instructions on how to participate. Go back to OSHA, the website. So we have around 16 minutes left. Let's cover some general news here with us. So scientists take final key step toward a hepatitis C vaccine here. So this is out of Copenhagen, Denmark. When people think of life-threatening viruses like COVID, HIV, and rabies, the only reassurance is that there are some types of treatment available to prevent fatal symptoms or reduce the spread to others. However, this is not the case for 58 million people who deal with chronic inflammation stemming from hepatitis C. I don't know if the cause is this, but a family member had hepatitis C and developed liver cancer. I would think that you might be more likely to get liver cancer, but I don't know if there's an actual documented mechanism to that. And it was a horrible death here. Danish researchers have taken a step in the right direction towards treating the problem. Scientists have identified the protein complex that gives hepatitis C the ability to bind and infect cells. And again, this is going to be key research to go and eradicate and prevent hepatitis C, which causes 300,000 deaths per year. My understanding is that there is a treatment here. It is very expensive with this right now. 41% say they're at their peak stress level right now. This is out of study finds here. In a year marked by financial worries and political tension, a new survey has uncovered the staggering impact of stress. The average person feels their head spinning from stress, whopping 156 times per year, translating to 3 times per week. So people are stressed out. 2024, heightened stress. Believe me, if I were to say that I'm immune to it, I would be lying to you. All right. TikTok. Watch what your kids are doing on TikTok and online, because there's a lot of stuff out there that's killing kids, basically from inhaling aerosols here with that. I mean, it's horrible situation here. Now, what is long COVID? Here's how doctors actually define it. This is an article by Dr. Faith Coleman. COVID-19 has been a tangle of alarming riddles wrapped in perplexing enigmas and devastating consequences. And it's killed 1.2 million people in the United States. I threw that number in there. And over 7 million worldwide. Pandemic's fallout include unrelenting disabling systemic conditions known as long COVID. I did not have long COVID. As everyone on the program knows, I've had COVID either 5 or 6 times. I think I had it once along with my father before the testing capability came out here. And basically, 7% of adults and 1% of children have had long COVID. And this is like a weird illness. I had it one time. It took about a month to get over COVID, month and a half. And Jay Allen, right, from our network, was talking to me about this. Says, Jimmy, what exactly is long COVID? What were your symptoms? And basically, what it was you're doing your thing, moving right along, and all of a sudden, you get whacked with fatigue. And I mean fatigue, like it hits you like a sledgehammer. It happened to me on the way home one time. I get hit with this. I'm driving along, do my thing. All of a sudden, I get this drowsy feeling where it's like comes on like really sudden and really. And what did I end up having to do? Luckily, I was right by a rest area. And I was able to pull off into the rest here, and I crashed out for about a half an hour until I recovered from here. But, again, a lot of people are having this with this, different symptoms and everything else. And it's basically, for me, it was a lot of fatigue. How are they doing this? 5 areas, right? Here, hold on. Long COVID was created by patients, not by everybody. So what is long COVID? Long COVID is a condition that occurs after infection is present for at least 3 months as a continuous relapsing thing. So basically hundreds of entities, an organ right of things. Shortness of breath, cough, persistent fatigue, post-exertional malaise. I don't know what that is. I never saw that word. Post-exertional, meaning that, okay, here we go. So it's, right, you do something and you all of a sudden get tired. difficulty concentrating, memory changes, recurring headaches, sleep disturbance, fast heart rate, lightheadedness, taste or smell issues, bloating, constipation, and diarrhea. All different things, you know, check with your doctor. Get medical documentation, at least, with this. All right. This is from The Conversation, research led by Andrea Font, Liverpool, from Liverpool John Moores University, from September 15th, a couple of days ago. For the past 3 years, a series of, now this is our knowledge of the universe has reached a critical tipping point. The past few years, a series of controversies have rocked the well-established field of cosmology. In a nutshell, the predictions of the standard model of the universe appear to be at odds with observations. This doesn't mean that there's a conspiracy. No, it just means that they got more information here. Okay. They have to rethink the cosmological model, right? Some even claim cosmology is in crisis. Right. To be fair, controversy a normal part of the scientific method. But basically, what's the crux of this? The measurements that they are taking are not consistently with what the models are saying. With that, specifically dealing with dark energy and dark matter. And they have identified biases in this research. So, we're on this. Now, going back to the post-pandemic, this is from the Epoch Times, article by Aaron Gifford. Larry Moore doesn't work in the school, but he knows why so many students skip class. On any given day, neighborhood kids relax in the chair and talk as he cuts their hair. He apparently is a barber. I tell you what. If you want to find out information about the community, go to a barber shop if you're a man, or a hairdresser if you're a woman, beautician, whatever you want to call, anything like that. I mean, you get all different kinds of information. It's funny. It's hard to get moving in the morning when there's nothing in the fridge. The children tell them nobody is making them go to school. Right? And they feel, again, not selling. Again, how's this going to impact long-term society, kids not being educated? And basically, and this is in Syracuse, a little more than half the district students miss 10% or more of instruction time, right? Meaning 18 of 180 school grades. And these are people in poverty communities, which they're never going to be able to break the cycle of poverty if they continue with this. And we're seeing this, right? Because of change habits and everything, and this goes on and on and on. We're going to take a commercial break here, and we're going to start talking about some other things here. So, here, let's add some humor in here.
This is going to blow your mind. There's a new daytime talk show on your local cable access station. What happens when safety, scandal, and heartbreak collide? Welcome to Safety Wars, the talk show. Today's episode is a doozy. Imagine confronting your unsafe supervisor who just happens to be your ex-wife's new hubby. Talk about a powder keg. But wait, there's more. We've got an exclusive interview with a corporate exec who's taken out life insurance policies on his riskiest workers, hoping to cash in on a deadly mishap. Yup, you heard that right. It's a real-life plot twist you can't make up. Tune in as Jim Posel, CSP, our very own Jerry Springer of Safety, dives deep into this explosive confrontation. Sparks will fly and secrets will be exposed. Catch the full episode on Safety Wars on YouTube and your favorite podcast platform. Don't miss out on the drama that could save your life. Like and share now, and stay safe, folks.
In an unpredictable world, one voice rises above the chaos. Meet Jim Posel, a seasoned safety expert who's navigated through some of the most dangerous scenarios, from anthrax, explosive cleanups, disasters, and numerous environmental cleanups, and lived to tell the tale. Now he's bringing his wealth of knowledge, insights, and experiences to you through Safety Wars. From workplace hazards to the hidden dangers in your own home, Jim covers it all with his engaging storytelling. Safety Wars isn't just a podcast. It's your guide to a safer world. Join Jim Pozo and become part of the Safety Wars revolution. Available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, and wherever you get your podcasts and videos. Safety Wars. Your safety is our mission.
All right. Where are we here? I wasn't set up for this. OSHA recordables, catastrophic losses, environmental disasters. You want answers? So do I. This is Jim Pozel with Safety Wars.
That's my daddy!
From the front lines of the safety war, it's Safety Wars. With your host, Jim Pozel on Safety FM. Get ready to face the harsh reality.
This is from the dailymail.co.uk. Norway's radiation levels mysteriously spike along Norway's border with Russia. As is claimed, activity has been seen at test site for Putin's flying Chernobyl nuclear missile. Traces of radioactive cesium-137 have been measured along Norway's border with Russia. The radiation levels are clearly higher than normal, and the cause of this spike is unknown. One fear is that it could relate to Russia's Pankovo test site for a nuclear-powered, nuclear-armed cruise missile. The experimental weapon, known as Vladimir Putin's Flying Chernobyl, is intended to be capable of remaining in the air for days or even weeks, that is, it probes for weaknesses in Western defenses with that. So, that's scary. It's going to be hovering like a drone and then wait to strike. Wow. Isn't modern technology wonderful with that? Russia's submarines and naval ships cross into a buffer zone off the Alaska and U.S. coast. Again, the U.S. Coast Guard said Monday that it tracked a group of Russian Navy vessels, including two submarines, as they cross into U.S. waters off Alaska in an apparent effort to avoid sea ice, a move that is permitted under international rules and customs. Here, to the Russian vessels, consisted of two submarines, a frigate, and a tugboat. The encounter took place 60 miles north of Point Hope. Again, we didn't know until the sub exploded that they actually are able to monitor this stuff. You know, it's incredible here. Scientists have just figured out how many chemicals enter our bodies through food. It's a lot. From everything else, from shrink wrap and takeout containers, you're looking at 14,000 known chemicals in food packaging, and about 25% of those have been found in the human body. With the forever compounds, metals, and endocrine disruptors. I mean, there's one theory that this is why people are always on edge, is with the endocrine disruption. And the other, a lot of the societal angst out there. Don't know if it is or not. Mystery of America's Parkinson Belt, where chemicals are fueling frightening spike in brain-wasting diseases. Again, there is a U-shaped portion in the U.S. where rates of the debilitating disease are nearly 50% higher. Southern California, the Sun Belt, the Rust Belts make up the region what experts call America's Parkinson's Belt. Again, I have a family member going through a similar illness. He was misdiagnosed with Parkinson's. It turned out to be water on the brain, hydrocephalus. It's a horrible, horrible, horrible illness. And here's our last. This is from ARS Technia. Ars Technia. Okay. I guess it's British. Omnipresent AI Cammons will ensure good behavior, says Larry Ellison. We're going to have supervision. I tell you what, all of this stuff, the surveillance cameras, good and bad, has good things and bad things. We're going to call it a program here, and I'll see you tomorrow, hopefully. It's likely going to be pre-recorded.
The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the host and its guest and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of the company. Examples of analysis discussed within this podcast are only examples. They should not be utilized in the real world as the only solution available, as they are based only on very limited and dated open source information. Assumptions made within this analysis are not reflective of the position of the company. No part of this podcast may be reproduced, stored in a retrieval system, or transmitted in any form or by any means, mechanical, electronic, recording, or otherwise, without prior written permission of the creator of the podcast, Jay Allen.